Blog Talk Radio.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization, and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Don't let money fool you. 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 You are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
Hotep family, this is your brother Kwasi Shuja Kawatu Kraft, your warrior for the people. Today's show, talking about the robbing and the shooting in the dollar stores. Come on, man. You know, what's this all about, you know? I've been working, actually, at some of these stores, and we had an incident in the Milwaukee area dollar store where a woman, 12-year-old daughter, someone put a gun to her head and threatened to shoot them. And they didn't get that safe open fast enough inside that store. And prior to that, they had shot up the place, and the mother ran in there and tried to get in there, and somebody stopped her at the door, you know, with a gun and saying, you ain't going nowhere. And, you know, and so the trauma, and I happened to meet this girl and this mother, and I just gave her my number, and I said, if I can do anything for you, if I can be an escort or teach some self-defense, whatever it may be, I can connect you with some people, whatever. But, you know, just the trauma from all of that that's going on, it was just so disturbing. And then I've worked security, you know, after doing law enforcement, I've taken a number of different security side jobs, and I took some of these jobs in some of these stores, so I got to meet a lot of the people and the customers that come in there and, you know, and deal with some of the issues that's been going on there. So, like I said, so I have a lot to say in regards to, you know, why I chose to speak on this Thursday. We air every Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight. And you can check us out on blogtalkradio.com. And you can hit the Sankofa Society, Historical Society, and look at our program on the Warriors Way, continuing the fight. And we have a host of programs on there. You can also go to Facebook and go to the Black Reality Think Tank and look it up, and you will again look for the program Warriors Way, continuing the fight. And we are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and this is a call-in format, and so the call-in number is 516-418-5674. I repeat, 516-418-5674. I'm also going to, before we start this discussion, I want to talk about Amir Locke. That's a young man that was killed, murdered by the police on February 2nd, the second day of Black History Month. We have a 22-year-old young man that was killed. Amir Rakari Locke. He was an African-American born and raised in Minnesota, United States. And these are just some things that his mother wants you to know about him. He lived in Minnesota, Hennepin County in Minnesota. He is Amir Lott and Kieran Wells, son of Linda Tyler's nephew and Nakia, Costa Mina's cousin. He had no criminal record. He owned a pistol and had a permit to carry a gun. He once attended a march supporting African American boy Trayvon Martin, 17, who was fatally shot by George Zimmerman, then 30, in Sanford, Florida, USA, on February 26, 2012. Now, Amir, amid the new coronavirus pandemic in 2021, Amir worked as a DoorDash food delivery driver. An aspiring entrepreneur and a musician. He started a limited liability company in 2021, and with the help of his mother, he planned to use the company for his music and work with the youth. Now, at 7:01 a.m. on February 2nd, 2022, Amir Lott was sleeping on a couch in his cousin's apartment in Minnesota when he was fatally shot by Minnesota Police Department Officer Mark Hennerman. He was not named in the no-knock search warrant. And we're talking about Amir Lott. The department was serving at the apartment that morning on a death and a homicide, according to the Hennepin County Medical Examiner. He was supposed to move to Dallas, Texas, on February 9th, 2022, to pursue his music career. And I mean, so this is Amir Rice. And, you know, the thing, and these are the 10 things that, you know, his family wanted you to know about him. But what I didn't like is when the report came out and they talked about Amir Rice, Amir Lott, they indicated that he was a suspect. And he was not a suspect. He was a victim. And then they talked about him having a gun. He's a licensed owner of a gun. He has no criminal record. They came in, the police, they had a no-knock warrant. So they had the key. They opened the door, and they show a video. And so inside of 10 seconds, they killed this man. And you saw Amir Lott getting up with a blanket or sheet covering half of his head. And he was trying to turn to see what was going on. He had his hand on the gun, had it clearly on his finger, not on the trigger, but on the trigger guard, not pointing at anybody. The officer just said, police, looked at him with the gun. Again, the gun was not pointing at anybody, and then they shot him several times, the officer that I named in the report, the Mark Hannum. And shot him several times and murdered him. You know, the trauma behind that, and I spoke with many people in regards to that incident because it's just so troubling to me. I have a young son, you know, a few years older, and I worry about these different things because my son, my daughter, my wife, it doesn't matter. You know, a lot of these law enforcement people, they get into these situations and they become judge and jury. And then they try to spin it like there was some information that we don't understand in regards to why this person was killed and murdered. And I did speak with someone when I was working at one of these dollar stores. And the person said, well, you know, he did have a gun, and he had his hand on the trigger. I said, no, he didn't have it on the trigger, and he wasn't pointing at anybody. He was pointing away from them. He was getting up. He was still groggy, and then they just shot him. He never was facing them. He didn't point his arm in their direction, none of that. I mean, that's clear. You can see it on the video. And then later on, they cleaned up the report. They indicated, when I say cleaned it up, they added more information, you know, and this was on court TV because they're saying, well, people want to know, because it is very dangerous when officers do no-knock warrants. I said, it's not a no-knock warrant. It's how they handled it when they dealt with a black man. It is not, because when they deal with, you don't read about them killing white people that way. That is a very rare incident. Now, you, well, no, people that are just killed senselessly for just almost no reason at all, other than the skin that they're in, are black people. It doesn't make a difference if you're a 12-year-old kid, Demir Wright, playing with a toy gun on the playground. Police officers just drove up to him, pointed his gun right out the window, and shoots and kills him. You know, and they, you know, they just seem to just have no tolerance and no consideration for the trauma and the things that they do to us. And so I wanted to, my condolences to Amir Locke's family. And I heard his mother. She spoke at a press conference, other family members. And it was just so hurtful and painful just to hear that. And so, again, I just wanted to put that out there. And I plan on doing another show, and I want some of these police officers, these black police officers, to speak on something like this. And I mean now, not after this investigation is done several months later, and so that you can come up with something. I mean, it's like the George Floyd incident. You know, you had officers who would not open their mouths until several months after George Floyd incident. And then all of a sudden they said, well, that's something that we wouldn't do, and we don't condone that. But until they got the okay to say that. And the George Floyd incident was one of the only incidents where officers finally told on other officers and said, hey, you did something wrong. And, you know, so you got this thing called white solidarity, and then you got that blue line. And so, like I said, I pray that things work out as well as they can under these circumstances for the family. And so that's going to be my ancestral profile. And like I said, I'm going to open this up later on for some law enforcement people to speak on these things. And why can't they speak to their coworkers about these things? I mean, I understand the struggles in there, because sometimes there was an officer recently, they showed when he was beating up a female officer, when one of the command officers was roughing up somebody in the car, and she grabbed him like, cool down, and then he threw her up against the car and very violently, and then he backed off, realizing that he was being videotaped with his own camcorder and stuff like that. And so how they dealt with that, I don't know. But at least you're starting to see officers address other officers. But at the same time, they also understand, you know, there's repercussions in regards to when you do things like that. Okay. When I talk about this, I'm going to just give you some history on this on these dollar stores. Now, during the Great Depression, there was a man named James Luther Turner who bought merchandise and liquidated it from a bankrupt person and from general stores, and then he sold it to retail. He had purchased a massive shipment of women's underwear, unable to persuade retailers to purchase it. So he and his son opened up their own store in 1939. Now, that was the forebearer of the Dollar Store General, in the store. The pair opened up in Springfield, Kentucky in 1955. That's the father and son. And in his book, My Father's Business, and we're talking about Luther Turner, James Luther Turner, and his son Cal. And in the father's book, he says that the ideal was to sell good stuff to rich folks. But because the market turned out to be saturated, they wound up selling the cheap stuff to poor folks. And 2 years and 29 stores later, the company was raking in $5 million annually. And so, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made. And, you know, and there's some psychological reasons why people go to these stores, because they feel that they're, you know, making more money. But before I kind of go into that, I just want to just put some things out there why people go to these stores. They say 9 out of 10 people shop at the dollar stores. 72% of people believe that it's less expensive if they go to the dollar store. 53% of people feel that it's convenient. 36% say they enjoy browsing around. 55% of the people like shopping there for home decor and party goods. That's 55%. And 47% go with the food. Now, the dollar store, especially those who have low income, live in the rural area. And so they really don't have a choice about some of the places where they go and shop. But the food access, you know, they advocate that. They worry that skyrocketing growth means businesses with broader offerings, more fruit and vegetables, in addition to the dollar store main stage, such as candy, soda, and other heavily processed packaged foods, get squeezed out. Now, some commodities are now pursuing that dollar store to do better to serve the community area that they operate in. You know, the dollar store, they say it changes the way we shop. And they are here to stay. I mean, they're making so much money. They were making so much money when a lot of these stores were closing that these dollar stores stayed open. They are in the low-income area. And, you know, there's a mentality and attitude that, you know, you're saving money when you go to these stores. And you're buying a lot of processed food. They're getting these foods large quantities, the dollar stores from places and for cheaper prices, and they're selling, turning around and selling it to the consumer. A lot of these places, and, you know, they say that, like, the dollar store products are toxic. It was a new report put out. I believe that was in 9/30 of 21. It indicated that 54% of all the products tested at the dollar store contain hazardous chemicals linked to cancer, learning disabilities, and serious illness. Now, what's wrong with dollar store? Also, the workers are burned out. You know, a lot of these workers work 70 hours a week, and if you're a manager, you're not getting paid overtime. They only make, I think, $9-something in an hour, and the managers make 10. And one of the managers indicated that they made $34,000 for the year. And so, like I said, a lot of these workers are, you know, they're not happy, so they're depressed, and they're working under a lot of pressure. And that also shows up in the way they deal with customers sometimes. And then you have customers that come in there that look to. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the one of the other things that they were saying about these dollar stores is that when they open up, they usually run other businesses out of the area. And that is known that to be true. I've seen that in different areas. But they're growing. They're growing. And a lot of people, I was looking at some incidents where people were killed. A lot of shooting incidents. There was an incident in Michigan, I think maybe about 2 years ago, during the pandemic, security guard had asked a customer to put a mask on because in Michigan they have a mandatory mask requirement. That customer got angry and shot and killed the security guard. Now, that wasn't an armed security guard. A lot of times, dollar stores, they don't have armed people. When I did work it, I was armed. But I know that in an incident when somebody robbed the store, they shot up the place, that security guard wasn't armed. But even if he had been, he might not have done any good because he was not paying attention. He was on his phone. And I don't think he positioned himself where he could see people coming in. And so, you know, there's a number of issues why these things happen.
Thank you.
You know, and so, hey, Sister Dee Dee, is that you?
Oh, yes, I apologize. I thought I had muted myself. I'm sorry.
I just opened it up when I saw you, and then I started just kind of giving some information in regards to some of these incidents at the dollar store. And I was talking about, you know, just a lot of the products and stuff like that, because they were saying that, you know, a lot of the stuff is toxic, you know, and a lot of people think that they're getting a really good deal on a lot of these foods. And and then, you know, and then they're kind of creating food deserts in the sense that, you know, they don't sell vegetables. You know, they just sell canned goods. And a lot of their canned goods are outdated, you know, along with the cereals. And it's always, and it's not that great of a choice of a lot of these different things. So they buy a lot of the stuff that people are trying to get rid of. But again, at the same time, you know, a lot of people, like I said, they go there for specific things. You know, household goods, you know, with you know, things that you clean your house with, you know, they find it cheaper to go there than go to a regular store, which I agree on a lot of times. But then they did some other studies where they indicated that shopping at the dollar store did not save you as much money as when you go to some of these other stores, because they have these different coupons and everything. So people that shop with coupons and they're really serious shoppers and so forth, it's a little different. But, you know, there's a difference in regards to we look at the number of violent acts that happens at the dollar stores, you know, where you have a low value quantity of items that are in the store, but yet people are looking to use deadly force and they're robbing that place. And they say one of the reasons that that's occurring is because, you know, easy access to money, and they see that they don't have security, and just the way the store is set up, you know. And when you look at the Dollar Tree and they talk about how they run their business, they basically run it with two employees. You know, you have the manager, and they like to make people managers because, you know, they work all these hours, but they don't get paid overtime. And there was a lawsuit just settled back in 2016 at a dollar store. I think it was in Virginia. I'm not 100% sure, so I'm not sure where it was, but it was in 2016 where the employees sued the dollar store because management told them that they had to clock out when they took their 10-minute breaks. Some of them got together, and these employees, and I think some of them were fired because they
didn't do what management said on a regular basis, and sometimes they stayed on the clock for their 10-minute break. And long and short of it, they ended up winning the suit, and they paid out at least $600,000. I think it was even more than that for the attorney fees and stuff like that. But in regards to how the money was spread out to all these employees and other people that got into this lawsuit, but it's just heartbreaking to see, even when the store was running, there was an incident where a guy was, the store was robbed, and someone was killed in the dollar store, and they remained open. I'm just going to read this incident. This is from a November 1st, 2018. And now this person, Woods, he's a worker at the dollar store. Woods went in to work on his day off to fill in for an absent coworker. Now, footage from the security camera shows a man entering the store just after 1 p.m. wearing a blue sweatsuit with a hood pulled over a red cap and holding a silver gun. He fired down the center aisle, hitting Woods in the back of the head. Then he pointed the gun at the cash register before seemingly to just panic, and he ran out of the store empty-handed. After an ambulance arrived, but Woods was no longer breathing, and his body was removed, the Dollar General remained open for several hours before closing, amid the protests from local residents. Woods' murder was one of three homicides in 6 months at the two discount chains in the St. Louis area. On June 13th, a man and a woman started arguing in a car parking lot at a Family Dollar on West Florenson Avenue, just outside of the city line, and he shot her once in the head, killing her. And less than a month after Woods' death, a 65-year-old woman was shopping in the Family Dollar in St. Charles Rock Road, Wins. Seemingly mentally ill 34-year-old woman grabbed a steak knife from a shelf in the store and stabbed her to death. Now, the Gun Violence Archive, a website that uses local news reports that law enforcement sources to tally crimes involving firearms list more than 200 violent incidents involving guns, 200 at Family Dollar and or Dollar General stores since the start of 2017, and nearly 50 of which resulted in death. The incidents include carjacking in the parking lot, drug deals gone bad, an altercation inside the stores, but a large number involved armed robberies in which workers, customers have been shot. Since the beginning of 2017, employees have been wounded in the shooting of a pistol whipping and at least 31 robberies. In the last seven other incidents, employees have been killed. The violence has not let up in the recent months when requirements for customers to wear masks made it harder for clerks to detect shoplifters who are bent on robbery. In early May, a worker at a Family Dollar in Flint, Michigan, was fatally shot after refusing entry into a customer without a mask. Now, the number of incidents can be explained in part by the store's ubiquity. There are more than 16,000 Dollar Generals and nearly 8,000 Family Dollars in the United States, 50% increase in the past decade. By comparison to Walmart, which has about 4,700 stores in the U.S., the stores are often high crime neighborhoods where there isn't simply enough other businesses for criminals to target. Now, routine gun violence has fallen sharply. Around the country, but they remain stubbornly high in many of the cities and the towns near these predominant areas. Now, the glowing signs of this discount chain become indicators of neglect, markets of a geographically places that the country has written all. But these factors are not sufficient enough to explain the trend. The chain's owners have done little to maintain the order in the stores, which tend to be thinly staffed and exist in a state of physical disarray. I know that to be so true because, I worked in those stores, and I'm working in the stores, and I look at signs of things that make it dangerous for me just to be in there. One of the things, and myself and some other retired police officers, that some of us that are retired, the security company that I work for, some of us are retired police officers. Some of us are just people that like doing security and have done it for a while. And some people are very new at the job, very young, but they get hired and they work, and they don't have that much experience in a lot of different things. This is a job because the likeliness that you will probably have to use some type of force to resolve a situation with a customer is likely. And then you do not really have the support of law enforcement because, of all the protests against police violence, and most of these stores are in a low-income area, which is pretty much generally the black community. And so a lot of these people, they realize that, the police aren't going to be zooming over here real quick. And at the same time, there are a lot of these stores in the suburbs. And it's a difference. Something happens here in a couple minutes. And so you don't have a lot of the robberies and incidents at the stores in the suburbs. But the ones in the city, very common, very common. I'm going to add, because there was a friend of mine that I asked to come on to the show, and he was involved in an incident at a Walgreens. And he's a security person. Not a police officer, not police trained, doesn't have this background in regards to law enforcement. He's just a young man from Mississippi that, that's how he makes his living, doing security. And he's been doing it for a long time. And I met him recently, a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that, I started to do is share intelligence. If something happens in the store, I pass it on to another person, another security person, to let them know what's going on, and we kind of keep our eyes on things, and then we can support each other in these situations, because we know that for the most part it's pretty much going to be us. And they have these stores where people walk in there, they have guns. There's a sign posted on the door that indicates no weapons, no guns, but we don't say anything because we don't want to create a confrontation, because we know that these people are going to be confrontational, and they generally come in there two to three at a time, some of these people that are armed, and so we're outnumbered. And even when we're doing security, it's only one of us a lot of times, and even in some of those cases, a lot of us aren't even armed. And they understand the risk, but again, it's about the money, because I just talked about a situation where a worker was shot and killed in the store. And after the ambulance came, and this was at a dollar store, and it removed the body, the store remained open. Didn't change their hours or anything. So just think of the trauma to other people that's in the store that witness something, and then they make it seem like work as usual. Just keep going. The business is more important than anything else. And I think people kind of read into that mentality, because it's like, well, if I take something from you, you're going to regroup anyway, and you don't mind, and a lot of stores have kind of created a lot of these different situations, whereas they don't want to look like they're worried about certain things are going to happen, so they don't have armed people there, and because they worry about liability. They worry about what you might have to do to somebody that's trying to hurt you, your employees, or something else. I mean, when, you know, for the most part, when they see us armed and look like we're able and capable, that deters them. They just decide to go somewhere else. So we were there for 2 weeks. And for the 2 weeks that we were there, we did not have an incident. And so they pulled us out of the store. And I'm sure what the conversation then is going to be that, well, we found there was no need, nothing happened in the 2 weeks, and so I think everything is calm and boom, and, you know, then move on. But, you know, people profile the store. They look at the workers, and like I said, they're disgruntled. There's a number of different situations why these people don't want to be there a lot of times. You know, one of the managers at the store I was at, he was like, I'm getting out of here. You know, he already has another job lined up. He's just waiting until everything gets set up, and then he's gone. And so most of those people aren't concerned and don't really care about the situation there. And then a lot of the people even set up the situations. I won't say a lot, some of them set up some of the situations where the place does get wild. And one of the reasons they're doing that, and I'm not justifying it and stuff like that, but when they feel that they're being cheated, you know, there's a lot of stores that have people work and off the clock and not clock in and so forth. They were doing that at the Walmart. I've seen that when I was working, because I've worked security at the different Walmarts and stuff like that, and I've seen those things happen there. And but, you know, like a lot of people don't understand the law. But at the same time, in some of those cases, it is not illegal to do some of these things for people in certain positions. So that was one of the things that was said. But I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to, you know, go into a lot of details in regards to that. But, you know, like I said, there was a lawsuit won by employees at a Family Dollar because they were told to clock out when they took their 10-minute break. And they didn't always do that. And so that's something that want to kind of look at, both situations. I'm going to open up the line for some questions and some comments in regards to some of these things that are going on at these dollar stores, or what you think a solution might be and why these things are happening. And so, Mr. Didi, you had any questions or comments in regards to these dollar store incidents or some of the things you think we might be able to do?
You know what? I would like to just say, forgive me. Hello out there, radio family. I would like to say a lot of stuff that goes on, especially with us in our community, you know, I always feel it's by design. It's by design. Mm-hmm. This so happens, you see all these dollar stores, Dollar Tree and all this, that's your ghetto five Walmart for our community.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is. And then we gravitate towards these little nasty stores with their little nasty canned goods. You might as well keep shopping in the darn gas station. You know, it's
right.
By design that they put this garbage in our community. And if we wouldn't patronize them and go in their stores, we can shut them down. Because the nasty old food that they're selling us is disgusting, especially the canned goods. It's chemicals in their family. Chemicals,
right.
My precious black family. In there, because first of all, that food has to have shelf life. Ain't no telling where it
right.
came from, how long it was sitting before it got to us. And then we're feeding our kids these darn noodles, just all kind of garbage. All kind
right.
of garbage. When you go way out, oh, they got the nice index stores and all that. You don't see them Dollar Tree
mm-hmm.
stores way out. Because sometimes, just for
right.
the hell of it,
I would take the scenic route and just go into some of their communities and some of their little places where they reside. You don't see none of that. None. I could remember back in the day when I was working, I asked J.J. Fish, I said, hey, how come y'all don't get close over there by the hospital? I said, man, y'all can make a lot of money. Do you know what he told me? He said, oh, no, man,
what?
We can't get over there. They won't allow us over there. I said, what? He said, oh, no, we can't get. It was an empty store right there. I used to work at St. Luke. And it was an empty big old restaurant right there, like right across the street. And
right.
Then they shut the Kentucky Fried Chicken down over there. So I said, well, J.J., how come y'all? Oh, no. He told me that they won't allow them. He said they asked and asked and asked and begged. Because if you notice, I mean, they eat more chicken and fish than we do. But anyway, he
right.
said they would not allow him there. And then we got the dope houses in our community. And I don't mean folks home. No, I'm talking about the pain
right.
clinic, the government dope
right.
house in our community. Dialysis clinics and all that. That's why I say it's about
right.
design. They put them up. Next thing you know, you got black folks on dialysis. So they knew that was coming down the pipe long before. Hey, when they was putting it up, they knew what was coming down the pipe.
Right, right.
The plant clinic. I believe that's why that young boy was, that's why that black, remember that black soldier that got killed that was working for the CDC, that Timothy Cunningham, and they claim he committed
oh.
suicide because he didn't get a
right.
promotion? Forget about Timothy. That man was murdered, Brother Kwasi. Murdered family. Because that man was getting ready to expose and stuff. And then look what happened after the smoke cleared. This man was murdered. Then here comes
yeah.
the Klan, y'all. It was mess coming down the pipe all along. And then what about the mess that Biden is saying, talking about giving people crack pipes? Come on, y'all. There's something going on.
I mean,
and it ain't right. Thank you, Brother Kwasi.
All right, thank
wow.
you. Thank you for your conversation, baby.
You're very welcome.
Let's see. I have a caller at 4600.
What's going on, Mr.
Comment?
I got a comment too. That ain't by design.
Okay.
You've got some ignorant people in them areas, and I don't know what to tell you. I know the ones you're talking about. In St. Louis, they're off of Florissant. That's right next to Ferguson. And what do you expect
mm-hmm.
is going to be happening there? And the one that the security guard got killed down on Grand and Natural Bridge. I know that very well. But
mm-hmm.
see, here's the thing. You talk about these food deserts. A grocery store owner by the name of Sterling Moody, he opened a big store, which was Dynamite Foods there in Baden, in St. Louis, and he didn't keep it open. He couldn't keep it open because people kept shoplifting and so on and so on. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture offered him a $10 million grant to do a feasibility study on opening up a store in Cairo, Illinois, which is all black. And the study
okay.
came back and said, one, the people don't have the money to open up the type of store that you are contemplating on opening. You know, when a customer come in a store, if they're not spending at least $12, and it may be more now because things have went up, and you have to have so many just to break even, from what he said. And these myths about these foreigners come to this country and are given money by the government, the open store, that is not true. He said that himself. It's just not true. So I don't know what to tell you to do. You know, blacks that were living in Ferguson have been living there a long time. They moved out around the time of Mike Brown, and they moved across the Missouri River into St. Charles County, all the way out to Wentzville, which St. Charles County is about 95% white, and all of the police departments are white. So they can't be running from police brutality. I mean, do you see it that way too, sir?
Well, I know what's going on, and I know that you see things totally, we're totally opposite in a lot of what you're saying. And I was looking at a study, and they were saying that on average they spend about $12 when they go to the dollar stores, on the average. you know. So you're saying they don't spend, but that's the average.
Well, that's what he said. He was the one that's going to get the grant.
But I'm going by reports that are out now, and that's what I'm saying, because you started talking and you started saying this. And I also understand that when you talk about, you know, law enforcement and, you know, I know you have a different take on all these different things, but you don't, in regards to the crime and a lot of things that go on, the way things are framed, and I say that when I say framed, how the media just kind of puts things out. I did an ancestral profile on a young man, and I was just, and one of the things I'm waiting to hear, I'm looking to hear from the NRA, gun rights people, where you had
I'm a lifetime member of the NRA, by the way.
Okay, pretty sure you are. And he had a young black man, 22 years old, sleep on the couch. Police in Minnesota, police, this was on February 2nd, Amir Bukhari Locke. He was asleep on the couch, and they came in on a no-knock warrant. Walked in, they had a key, got the key, walked in there. They saw him, and he grabbed his gun, had his finger on the trigger guard, didn't point it at anybody. His face was half covered, wasn't facing the officer, and inside of 10 seconds, they shot and they killed him. And, you know, and I see these things happen over and over, but one thing that remains common is that it is not...
How many do you think you hear about in a year's time?
No, listen to me. Just listen to me. Just let me hear me. You don't see black officers killing white people like that. They know if they did, they wouldn't have a job. They, you know, and you never heard them say, hey, drop the gun. None of that. None of that was there. You know, just walked in there, police, saw him with a gun in his hand, saw he wasn't even looking at him, the gun wasn't even facing him, and the gun had the clear shot showing. I mean, this is video. He shot and killed him. And then they want to try to villainize him and saying that he was a suspect. That wasn't the case. He wasn't a suspect. And, you know, so...
Well, you know, I've heard about that case. You don't have to get into much detail. I wanted to comment on a couple other things.
Just get into details when we talk about these things, because a young man was killed. But this keeps going on over and over, and they always seem to find a way to villainize the victims in these matters. You know, we're not trying to destroy and do all these different things to people, but, you know, this is just what goes on. You know, it's just so common. And
well, you know, I've got people who've been killed. I've got family members who've been killed with that kind of stuff. You can't, you know, in St. Louis, you had a mother and her 11-year-old son going to hijack a car. A man stopped to give him a lift. The kid get in the back. Soon as they pull off, the kid pulls a pistol out, 11-year-old, and pistol whips him upside the head. The mother reached over, turned the ignition off, opened the door, kicked the man out, and they gone. 11-year-old just black child with his mama. And, you know, here's the thing, too. You can talk about these warrants, but in the last 251 days, I say people can talk about these onesies and twosies and threesies. But, heck, look at Kim Fox let loose 29,000 felons in Chicago, in Cook County. You got the same thing with Kim Gardner in St. Louis. She tell the police if they look like they need what they stealing, leave them, let them go. And we know what's going on out in California with these people going in baskets
we
and calculators. I got just one more.
Found out that a lot of these people that were arrested as felons were falsely arrested. And so that's why you have a lot
of
people.
Well, not in St. Louis.
You know, so,
I don't know about Cook County, but it's not that way in St. Louis. Well, I'm going to tell the whole story on this. 484 murders in 251 days as of Sunday, February the 6th. 3,576 shot in Chicago. That's black shooting black, no white police shooting. I say again, 3,576 shot and 484 murders. I don't know what you call
that,
but I appreciate the opportunity. You have a nice day, and be careful.
All right, too. always get something interesting from him to his take on the situation. Well, we're going to go to our first break. We're at the top of the hour. And again, the line is going to be open for calls, for questions or comments at 516-418-5674. I repeat, 516-418-5674. Warriors Way, continuing the fight. The robbing and shooting and the dollar store. Come on, man. Let's have this discussion. Let's talk about this. Your thoughts. Okay.
He's probably taking the last count at the moment. I'll do my best.
Last night, I had a dream. When I got to Africa, I had one hell of a rumble. I had to beat Tarzan's behind first for claiming to be the king in the jungle. For this fight, I've wrestled with alligators. I've tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning and put thunder in jail. You know I'm bad. I have murdered a rock. I injured a stone and I hospitalized a brick. I'm so bad, I make medicine sick. I'm so fast, man, I can run through a hurricane and don't get wet. When Joy Fulmer meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
The face of truth is open. The eyes of truth are bright. The lips of truth are ever closed. And the head of truth is upright. The breath of truth stands forward. The gaze of truth is straight. Truth has neither fear nor doubt. Truth has patience to wait. The words of truth are touching. The voice of truth is deep. The law of truth is simple. All you sow, you reap. The soul of truth is flaming. The heart of truth is warm. The mind of truth is clear and firm through rain and storm. Facts are only its shadow. Truth stands above all sin. Great be the battle of life. Truth in the end shall win. Life of truth is eternal, immortal is its past. Power of truth shall endure, truth shall hold to the last.
This is the legend of Muhammad Ali, the prettiest fighter there ever will be. He talks a great deal, he brags indeed, of a powerful punch and blinding speed. The fistic world was dull and wearied with the champ like Foreman. Things had to be dreary. Now someone with color, someone with dash, he brings fight fans a running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. Ali fights great. He's got speed and endurance. If you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. Ali's got a left, Ali's got a right. If he hits you once, you're asleep for the night. And as you lie on the floor while the ref counts 10, you better hope and pray you don't meet me again. For I'm the man this poem is about, the true champion of the world, there isn't a doubt. Once I predicted and I knew the score, I told them I'd be champ of the world in 64. When I say three, they go in the third. Don't bet against me, I'm a man of my word. Do you remember when I predicted Sonny Liston's dismemberment? I hit him so hard, he forgot where October and November went. If I tell you a mosquito could pull a plow, don't ask how, hitch him up.
I'd like for them to say he took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one teaspoon of generosity, one pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pinch of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith, and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it over a span of a lifetime, and he served it to each and every deserving person.
You are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal. Put in the Sankofa Historical Society and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
Hotel family, we are back. I just wanted to take a moment to talk about William Rogers, my mentor and good friend, program that was on, he had last Tuesday. And he had his guest, she wrote a book, Tiffany Drayton, Drayton, Tiffany, Tiffanie. She wrote a book, The Black American Refugee, and Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream. And she just went into some great detail in regards to, you know, the things that we're dealing with and how we look at things and how we need to just come together in one common purpose and work with that versus with all these different ideologies and so forth. And she just made so many good points in regards to just healing and stuff, and that was chapter 6. So the book is going to be out, I think, in about another week or two. So you can pretty much get it on all your Amazon and other book sites. But that was a very edifying conversation, and she had a lot to share. So again, that's called The Black American Refugee, Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream. And this is by Tiffany Drayton. Okay. I called up one of my friends that I work with, and I was hoping that he would come on, but he was telling me about an incident that took place several years ago where he was working security, and he was at a Walgreens. And while at that Walgreens, I think it was three people that came in there. I think the one person was the lookout person that remained in the car, kept the car running, and two other people came in, and both people were armed. The security personnel, we'll just call him JJ, saw what was going on, positioned himself in the store where they didn't see him, and then they went behind the counter and put the gun to the cashier's face and told them to open up the safe. And so as the cashier is opening up the safe and both of the men are behind the counter, and the people that were in the store ran out, and some of them just stayed right there and didn't move. JJ sees what's going on, and he eases up on them with his gun out, and he gets behind him. He makes the first guy drop the gun, and the other guy that was concentrating on the cashier getting her to open up the safe, he put the gun right to the back of his head and said, "Drop that gun or you're done." And so the other guy dropped the gun. And the police were called. He ended up arresting this man. And they ended up getting another person that was out in the parking lot. They didn't get him that day, but they got him later on. But this person that has robbed, tried to rob the Walgreens on this particular day, had done dozens of robberies throughout the Milwaukee area and during the Walgreens. And it's just interesting where you have a security person, not a law enforcement person, the older person that's been doing security for quite some time. And I say older, I'll say he's in his 40s. But he's well-adapted and understanding as to what his capabilities are and what he should be doing in these situations and circumstances. And he made the right moves and was putting himself in position to stop these guys and make sure no one got hurt. And so they put their guns down. Police came there and took them into custody. Now, we've seen similar situations where guys have guns and police show up, those guys are shot. You know, but generally it is somebody that doesn't look like us that does that. And so now you have this black-on-black person, you know, two people with guns trying to rob someone in the store with this security person working, and he eases up on them, make them drop their weapons, and make it so that they're able to be turned in to law enforcement without any other incident or without bloodshed or brutality. They didn't get beat, any of that. And so you wonder when they talk and they make this assumption that police officers are trained better than most people and so forth, and that is just not true. But there's an attitude that they have when they deal with us specifically. This young man, I give him a lot of support for his acts in that situation, how he handled that situation was great, was awesome. But again, if he had to use force because the guy didn't want to listen to him and maybe he was going to maybe shoot or do something else, then, you know, he would have had to do what he had to do. But most of us understand, and I never want to get into a situation where I have to maybe shoot somebody. I'm not looking to shoot anybody if they want to steal some property. Somebody wants to run out of the store, and I let the people know right off the bat, hey, look, I'm here for your protection. I'm going to do all I can to make sure that nobody hurts you or any harm to any of you guys in here, okay? Or for the customers coming and going. And when I was in the store working, and I worked there several days, and the customers were very happy that I was there. And when it got dark outside, I made sure they got to their cars, okay? And it's just amazing that I saw so many people come in there within an hour. You know, you got dozens of people there. It looks like the door is a revolving door, nonstop, and spending a lot of money in this store. And so when this, we had a caller earlier saying that they don't even spend $12 when they come, that's not the case at all. And then, like I said, there was another report. But again, he kind of puts things out there because he has an attitude towards people of color. And he puts it out there in so many ways, shapes, and forms. I've had him make these comments and stuff over and over again. But, again, you know, to each his own, they have their own opinion, but we want to qualify these things with facts. And so don't just say certain things just because you feel a certain way about people. You know? So I think, you know, that's what was going on with him, but I wanted to kind of put that to rest a little bit because, like I said, we do have a lot of people that look like us, the black and brown people that are trained to heal people in our community and rid them of all this violence and nonsense that's going on. I mean, what would put a person's mindset to, you know, rob a Family Dollar and put a gun to a kid's head and then threaten the cashier and say, if you don't open this safe, I'm going to kill this little girl. Now the trauma that this little girl is going to have, you know, and so I hope that, you know, she, and I'm pretty sure that the mother is going to, you know, get her the help she needs. And because one of the things that was said in conversation when I'm talking to some of these people, because the police want you to give them as much information as you can, explain to them this the person involved, they didn't let their kid talk to the police, nor did they, because there was an incident a while back where there was a family of six people. I don't know if they were all related, but they were in their one home, and it was a couple weeks ago in the Milwaukee area where six people were killed, and those three of the people were witnesses to a homicide. And so, and Milwaukee has got rid of their witness protection program several years ago. But even so, I know this from working the job as a process server. And as a process server, I will go out and serve warrants. I mean, not warrants, but subpoenas to people that were witnesses or victims in incidents. And a lot of times, you know, we get their information, their address, where they live. We have that information, their phone number. And a lot of times these people would give us maybe bogus addresses or phone numbers. And I didn't understand that, why they did that sometimes. But then later on I found out because the information that we get them, they put that, they forward that to the defense attorney. And then the defense attorney gives that information to his client. And so a lot of these times I had an incident where I worked security again, and I was working at a clinic where a person had shot somebody, and he shot a person because this person was supposed to be a witness to a homicide that one of his family members was involved in. And so he shot a person and ended up shooting a young kid, an 8-year-old or 7-year-old kid, and this kid ended up having to get his leg amputated. And now this incident happened in 2019, and it is 2022. I'm dealing with this guy, and it's just no way I should be. But he had a possible 70-year sentence if convicted, and his case was dismissed without prejudice because no witnesses appeared in court. And so I want to, and so when you look at a lot of these incidents that happen, you know, in these communities, and a lot of people know the people in the community, people that work in these areas, they live right around the corner or the area where they work. They're close. And a lot of the people that rob these places are people that live in that immediate area. So they know these people. Not that there's a relationship with a lot of them, but they know them in the sense where if they need to get to them, and these people know that and they understand that. And so there's a different attitude in regards to who's really going to protect me if something does happen. And so it was a good feeling when myself and other people, because we rotated, we worked long hours, but I worked a little differently, and not just for their safety, but for my safety. You know, some people sat down. I wasn't going to do that. A matter of fact, the incident when the place had got robbed, and I know this from just other intelligence, the security person was on the phone, not paying attention, on his cell phone, just looking at things, this and that, and they rushed in there. Guy made him get on the ground. And not only that, the security person, he wasn't on. And then the person shot up the place with an AK-47. And then he grabbed a customer, a kid, and put a gun to their head and told the person, open the safe. And if you don't, I'm going to shoot that person. And then a family member of that person tried to get in the store, and somebody else was at the door and had a gun pointed at that family member and said, you ain't going nowhere. Long and short of it, they got the money that they needed or tried to get, and they left the store. And that store, I drove by it today. I saw it to be open. But I know, so you look at the trauma that the people must have been going through. And I read about a situation that happened in Ohio, I think it was, where a worker came in and subbed for somebody called. Somebody called in sick. And he came in and worked and took a shift and was shot and killed by someone, shot in the back of the head. And the ambulance was called. They did an investigation when the police got there, got information. And when coroners removed the body, the store remained open, did not close. And so what kind of message, you know, are you sending, you know, when those things happen? What are you saying about the people, you know? And so it's really something. I'm going to just give you some more stories in regards to, you know, just the seriousness of how these things happen. I'm going to talk about a situation here. And this is General Dollar, and this is going to be, I think, in the Dayton, Ohio area. So one day in Dayton, needing a winter hat, I stopped by a Dollar General at West 3rd Street, James H. McGee Boulevard, and Donald and his mother were making their way in the aisle. Now, goods spilled off the shelves and carts piled high with boxes wanting to be opened and stacked, giving the store air neglect. So shortly before Donald and I met, he had been the victim of an armed robbery at another Westside General Dollar. It was homecoming weekend at Central State University, the historical black college near Dayton. And his mother needed some barbecue sauce, so Donald was standing in line to pay when two young men, probably in their late teens, came in and pointed a gun at the cashier. Now, Donald concluded that they were amateurs, and they were wearing ski masks, and they were, one of them had pulled the gun slide back, not realizing that he had already chambered around. The bullet popped out. They ordered Donald and two women in line to get on the floor. They then took the money. He had cash from his paycheck, $700. Donald described the event as undramatic in a routine manner. And for good reason, armed robberies are so regular occurrence at the Dayton Dollar stores. In 2017, the year he was held up, there were 32 armed robberies at 18 Dollar General and Family Dollars in Dayton. This count didn't include the store where he was robbed, which sits just behind the city line. Now, last year, where two dozen, the violent included more than robberies too. Last July, a man and a woman were killed outside the West Family Dollar, murder-suicide. In September, a man was shot during a drug deal outside Dollar General, where I had run into Donald's mother, and told that Donald, that the police received an average of nearly 1,000 calls for service, 1,000 calls for service each year. Now, there has been more, and this is at the Family Dollar. Just 9 of the city's Family Dollars there have been to one of Dayton's two major hospitals, Grandview Medical Center, where police are often summoned for interviews with victims of violent crimes, drug overdoses, and other problems. The Dayton Police Department prides itself on being a modern, data-driven force, embracing such initiatives as harm reduction measures to combat the opioid epidemic. And several years ago, noticing the rise and calls at the dollar stores. Now, the department provided training sessions for family dollar managers on how to practice what police call crime prevention through environmental design. Our officers showed them how to less trash out and less clutter inside the fewer big ads in the windows, which blocked the view of responding police, would make it easier and make the store safer. The store managers were told to instruct cashiers to make frequent transfers to cash and registers to the safe. Until 2004, Dollar General did not accept credit cards, and the stores still deal heavily in cash. And so that's another reason why they're robbed so much. But Jason Hall, the commander of the city's violent crime bureau, told the effect of the training had dissipated, partly because the stores, which pay a starting wage of about $9 to $10 an hour, states that without higher minimum wage thresholds, which such high turnover, it was supposed to be passed down to the rest of the employees, but it didn't trickle down. He said the rank and file did not reap the benefits of that training. Store managers have resisted pleas to reduce trash of loitering outside their stores and seeing that their responsibility is limited to the stores themselves and that they are often slow about getting police the feed from the cameras and robberies. Hall said that the cameras are typically of such low quality and so poorly placed that their record of limited use anyway. Now, Nan Whaley, the mayor of Dayton, told me that the managers sometimes discourage employees from testifying in court against robbers because they're needed to staff the stores. A spokesperson, I mean, get that. A spokesperson of the dollar store said that they were unaware of this practice. What is that? They are not even respecting the justice system, Whaley said. They don't even care if they're being held up at gunpoint. Recently, Dayton cited that the crime and the violence that attract a reason to challenge their request to sell alcohol. Several years ago, Dollar Store obtained alcohol license for many of the Dayton area stores in 2017. The city's law department began seeking to block the request of Family Dollar to obtain license of several of its stores, including three of the West Side. And, you know, so there was an increase in incidents, you know, with the alcohol being sold in some of these places. So it's just something when you hear about some of the things that goes on, and this is management. And so the way the stores are set up a lot of times, because when I was working at these stores, it was just two people. And it should be more. And the windows, you know, like they were saying, it's got all this information, advertisement on there. So, again, you know, if I'm in a squad car driving by, you know, I'm not going to just see something. I'm going to have to get out and go inside. And sometimes, you know, I might not have that time. I'm trying to do and patrol a large area and make this contact with a lot of different people and stuff like that, because I know when I used to go places and I would go by certain businesses and I would make contact with these people and I would talk to them, and so they would know I was working. And when I was working, I would be in my squad car and I would pull up by the window and I would wave at them. Now, I would signal to them. If they didn't wave back at me and I noticed that they saw me, then, you know, I'm going to get out, I'm going to go in and I'm going to figure out, you know, what the problem may be, and I will call for backup. And so, and I do that, and I said that because I didn't want the customer or the person that might be causing the problem to know or feel that the employee summoned the police. And so I just get out and I just make my own case, you know, just by being in the store. And I've done that many a time. But again, that's because I established a relationship with the customers, and that's very important when you're trying to do a lot of crime prevention. a lot of these dollar stores. And when I worked at these dollar stores, I mean, they were not clean inside. Items were stacked on the in the aisle. Trash on the floor. So all of those things become hazards where somebody can trip and all of a sudden they're going to sue the store. But just but it's hard for the employees to, you know, keep these things in operation if you get a crowd in the store in long lines, and so you got to have two people working the register. And then, you know, doing all the other duties that, you know, they need to do with stocking and cleaning and price checks. And it's just so many different things. And when I looked at some of the things that they were saying about the Dollar General, and they were saying some of the places, I think it was in Texas, but then, but there were several cities throughout the United States that they do not want the dollar stores in their area because they create a chaotic situation. So, by the way, they operate their stores. And so when you're listening to when I made some comments about, you know, the police came there to talk to the Dollar General employees, and then one of the employees indicated that they did not want their employees didn't want them to testify against perpetrators that committed crimes because they didn't want them to miss a day of work. And so when you look at those different things, and you got people that are just kind of being bullied while they're on these different jobs, because if they testify and they miss work, you know, they're going to possibly lose their job, you know, then that creates some tension and maybe some disloyalty in that regard, you know, because when you're treating people like they don't mean anything, and they clearly showed that when a person gets killed in the store and you don't even close the store up after they remove the body, you just have people keep working. I mean, what kind of trauma are these people going through? Where are the customers? Or what are they thinking? Just the most important thing is money. This is just how you operate. You know, so pretty sad that, you know, those things happen. You have people that will do just about anything for the love of money. And a lot of times it's not even money. And, you know, I had a song I played for the love of money, the New Jack City version. And, you know, and there have been so many killing and the attitude that, you know, you do anything for the dollar, you know, and this is what we're getting at these dollar stores. You know, why? I mean, where's the common sense? You know, we had codes of conduct growing up. There were things you did and you didn't do. And you and there were certain people you didn't mess with. You know, even some of these gangs had these codes of conduct. You know, I can't think of the guys. Larry Hoop for Gangster Disciples. You know, you didn't mess with old people. You didn't mess with young kids. There were certain things that you didn't do. And that's not what we're looking at today. You know, I can think back, and I'm 61 years old, and I can think back, you know, in the 80s and 90s, certain crimes would happen. You knew it wasn't somebody black. But today, you know, it's more common than not. And why is that? And I think that part of that is that we've been assimilated into this European way of doing things, you know, and we are attacking each other, you know, and they've created a situation. When I say they, this white supremacy has always been set up where it works to get us to work against each other. And that's one of the things that's going on. You know, when I talked about this situation, when I talked about this Amir Locke being killed, murdered by the police, and I mentioned this to a black female that, you know, when I was in the store, and she had I mentioned it to her, and she's like, well, he had a gun. I'm like, he legally had a gun. He didn't point it at anybody, anything, but again, they startled him coming in there and so forth, and then they shot and killed him. And didn't they drop the gun or anything like that? None of that. And so, but at the same time, here's a black female, a lady that could be even be his mother, old enough to be his mother. She was okay with that in her conversation because, you know, a lot of times when they tell our story, they get to frame it the way they want to frame it. And then there was a thing on Court TV, and they were talking about, we got more evidence in regards to this, that, whatever, why they were there. And then they'll look into maybe some screening issues as to how they can do things differently so that they won't make these mistakes. But he happens to be a casualty in regards to of the work that they do because some of the people that were there or might not have been there, but they lived at that location, was a suspect, but not the person that was killed, not this Amir Locke. And so we have to do a better job in regards to, you know, how we deal with so many situations because we know that, you know, we need the police. We do need them. There are some people out there that, you know, like some of these people that have killed these people in these dollar stores. I mean, we need the police. We do. But we need them to treat us with dignity, respect, and humility. And that's not happening. And when they get an opportunity to brutalize us, embarrass us, and kill us, we see that happen. And it's not a two-way street, wherein I say that meaning that you don't see black officers doing that to white people because they know they're not going to have a job. And they're not going to speak out on a lot of these different things. You know, and so that's troubling to me, but I think that we need to have this conversation. And like I said, I am going to open the door for this conversation. I want to make it so that some of these officers, hopefully, because even some of the retired officers won't even talk about this because they still work a job in which they are in contact with other retired police officers, and they kind of let them know and make them feel uncomfortable on the job because of, you know, their fight for liberating the black and brown people of this planet. I have a friend of mine, and I plan on doing the show next week. He's going to be on the show. He's a detective for Milwaukee Police Department for 32 years, and he solved over 1,000 homicides. And this was in the black community. And he had to do this by himself. He had to investigate these cases by himself. And one of the reasons that he was so successful because he treated people in the black community with dignity. And so they gave him information because they wanted these people that committed these homicides, they wanted them to be brought to justice. And he was able to do that. But he did not work white partners because they were jealous of him because of the work that he was able to do and accomplish because he treated people decent. And whereas they went in and they treated everybody like they're criminals, liars, and just no good. You know, like I said, I had a caller earlier, and he talks with that same attitude, and so like I said, so he'll be back. He'll be on the program next week. There was an incident where you had a man playing self defense, had killed a lawyer, and this was that Theodore Edgecombe, and he faced the count of reckless homicide in that case. And this incident, I believe, it took place of September 22 of 2020. And attorney was Jason Clearman, who was 54. And the detective I'm talking about, Ricky Burns, he worked that case. And he's going to give some conversation in regards to, you know, how this thing worked, how it worked out, and, you know, on that case scenario and stuff, because this Theodore Edgecombe, he was convicted. And I believe, I'm not sure how many years he got. I think he might have got 70 years or something to that effect. But there were a lot of things that that Ricky felt went wrong in regards to, you know, maybe he could have said something to make things different. And I said, look, you know, a lot of us go around thinking that we have the answers for a lot of these different cases when they come up, that we, it's something that we didn't say, or we should have went at this angle or something like that. And I'm like, no. The system is against us, and we have won some battles here and there, but not even close to being the majority, a very small percentage. And so, and I think a lot of that, because they do have their sacrificial lambs in some of these cases, where we'll win some cases, because it's like, man, we don't care about this guy anymore. He's no longer any use to us. And this is the bigger picture. We'll let you have this, and this will quiet you down for a minute. Then, because we're going to continue to do the things that we're doing. When I say we, I'm saying these people that are paid to protect and serve, but just seem to find a way to kill black and brown people in situations where it doesn't need to happen, and it happens repeatedly. But my point was that I was saying that a lot of times we get to thinking that it's something that we could have did, you know, like a lot of times people tell their kids, well, you know, when the police pull you over, you know, put both your hands out the window, put your both hands on the steering wheel, put your license on the dashboard, do all these things so he's not afraid and this and that. And you've had these things happen like that, and yet people were still killed. So it is not what you do, it is the person that you happen to be dealing with. If this officer is that no person, and that no person is, no matter what you do or say, they mean you harm, and they're looking to justify it any way, shape, or form. You had, I can't think, it was a Castile, the kid in Minnesota, where his girlfriend, Philando Castile, I think, where his girlfriend was talking to the officer saying he does have a concealed carry, and this was a traffic stop, and he said he does have a concealed carry, he does have a gun, and he has a license, and so he can get it to you. It's in his back pocket, and they have a small child in the car. So there's three people in the car, and as she's talking to the officer, then he says, he's showing them where his wallet is, and then the officer shoots and kills this guy. You know, the officer is still working the job. The family was awarded some money and a wrongful, I won't even say, I don't know the term of that, if that was called wrongful. Because, like I said, that officer is still working the job. But, you know, that happens so often. So it's not so much that, no, it's not at all that you need to do things a certain way. It is the person that you might be dealing with, and they have no concern or consideration for your life. And we just don't know when that's going to happen, when it happens. It's so tragic that we have so many people that look like us that for money, and at these dollars, they, you know, how low will they go? You know, put a gun to a kid's head, threaten them for money. There was an incident and where a person couldn't get a safe open out of being nervous. And a lot of these safes are on timing where they can't get open, where a person was killed because they couldn't get a safe open. And just imagine somebody putting a gun to your head. And then you have some people that have been in these situations before, and, you know, they kind of walk around with a badge of honor, so to speak, because they've been robbed, and they seem to be immune to certain things. But that's because they don't understand what it's like to be shot or killed, because how can a person know these things if they've never been shot? You know, so some of these people, they walk around with an immunity, a invincibility, so to speak, and some of these people that these owners of these corporations, you know, that are making millions and millions of dollars, and these stores are growing, and they're not going anywhere because, you know, people feel that they need these stores, and they shop there, and regardless, you know, they feel that they're getting better deals. I talked earlier about, you know, at some of these stores, there was even 81% of the products that were tested at the dollar stores promote cancerous growth, birth defects, and brain damage. And all of that is from a lot of the lead that's in a lot of the items that they are in the store. And like some of the people, and they buy these bulk items, and a lot of these things are outdated and, you know, again, but people feel, and the price-wise, it's not the same. I mean, it's you're not saving as much money as you think. And I've seen people, and I couldn't understand for the life of me when I was working in the store, and I'm watching people spend $150, you know, buying groceries, and they don't sell meat. They don't sell fruits and vegetables. I mean, they don't sell stuff in cans. But, you know, a lot of the things that you really need that are really healthy for you, most of the stuff that they sell is processed. But when you look at the health of our people, and these stores are concentrated in our neighborhood, don't be surprised that all these illnesses that are a reflection of how we live and how we respond to the environment, you know. So a lot of these places have asked and put up petitions not to have these Dollar General stores or however, whatever name they go by in their community. You know, so that's one of the things that, you know, some of the that they were looking at because of, you know, the crime that seemed to develop, intensify with those stores because of the lack of concern and care in regards to security. And then a lot of the good businesses generally leave once dollar stores come in that area. It runs other businesses out because of the crime that's attached to a dollar store. So other businesses move out. So there's a lot of issues in regard to, you know, the pluses and minuses. You know, you can say, you know, like immediate things, you know, like you want to get your party goods, and, I mean, school supplies, you know, very cheap, you know, versus you go to some of these other places, you know, it's going to be a little more at the Walmart, but you'll have a better selection, but selection is not always everything. I just need a pencil, you know. They may have five or six different kinds here. They just have, you know, they're all the same. But, again, you know, you're still paying a lot less, and then it's convenient. You don't have to go as far because it's right in your neighborhood. And so these things are by design. You know, we had a caller make a comment in regards to that, that this is by design. They target certain neighborhoods, and this is where they flourish and stuff. And so they make a lot of money at these dollars. Lots of money. And so, again, I'm going to make another comment in regards to book from author that Tiffany Drayton that I listened to on Doc Rogers' Black Reality Think on Tuesday night. You can always go and search that to the Black Reality State for Time for Awakening. You can go to the Facebook and because all the programs are archived and look for the Black Reality Think Tank. And this program is titled The American Refugee, The Narcissism of the American Dream. This is the book that she wrote, Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream, The Black American Refugee. And she really laid that out biblically and stuff. So I learned a lot from that conversation. So that would be a great lesson if you get a chance to listen to that. Also, again, Ricky Burns, he's a good friend of mine, and he's going to be here next week for our show, and we're going to talk about that incident in regards to that Theodore Edgecombe. And that was an incident, if you don't recall, where this young man was on a bicycle, and he got into a verbal altercation with this Jason Clearman, who was the passenger in the vehicle. Long and short of that, this Edgecombe punched this Clearman and drove off, I mean, and rode off of his bike. Then he was pursued by Clearman, whose wife was driving the vehicle, and ran him off the road. And he got up on his bike and, you know, and adjusted himself and then started again, and then it came at him again. And this time when he came at him, this Clearman got out of his vehicle and walked over to him. And he's a bigger man, much larger man, and this Edgecombe had a firearm, and he was on a bike, but he took his firearm out and shot and killed him. Now, there are a lot of things that went on that weren't allowed as evidence, and so those are some of the things that we're going to talk about, you know, the condition of the driver and the passenger who was now deceased, this Clearman. And again, I told him, I said, hey, you didn't do anything wrong. This is just the system in which we live in, and we don't need to beat ourselves up on this thing because, you know, some of these things are by design. It's just how it works out. You know, you got a Kyle Rittenhouse that kills two people and injures another one, and he claims self-defense and it worked for him, but it's always going to be different for us. Okay, thank you for joining Warriors Way, continuing the fight. We will be back next Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We will have former MPD detective Ricky Burns. And I will post the title of the program and look forward to seeing you guys next week. So, again, thank you for joining us on Warriors Way, continuing the fight. You can also look at these programs on Blog Talk Radio, Warriors Way, continuing the fight. And they are archived. And you can also go to Black Reality Think Tank and go to the Sankofa Historical Society and look up Warriors Way, continuing the fight. And you'll find the programs. You'll find a number of different programs that you want. All right. Thanks again, Hotep people. Thanks for joining us.
When the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory.
Glory. Glory.
Oh,
glory. Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon. Formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, Lord.
Every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes.